All right, this is Pure Decking show number 559 for Thursday. What is today? April 11th, 1970. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and watching people go through amazing hoops to not change a premise. Tonight, we have a madman. What is up, madman?
Didn't you know it's sometimes easier to change the world than to change your premise?
I believe it. I would believe. Ignore the USB dings. And we have a static.
Hello.
What is up?
Premise? Prius. I don't like changing Priuses. Oh, premises. I don't know.
Fair enough. So, well, before I pick what story we're starting with, Madman, which one were you laughing so hard at?
Did you lose Madman?
Oh, no. I muted myself so I could sneeze.
I heard you cackling at one of the stories I posted. Which one was it?
Oh, the fake law firms.
Okay, good. That was the first one. Okay, we'll start with that. So, anyways, yeah, I thought this one would be fun to talk about because it's an interesting scam, actually. So, it's from Ars Technica. Headline is "Fake AI Law Firms Are Sending Fake DMCA Threats to Generate Fake SEO Gains." I don't know that the last part is fake, but it's anyways, in the article they go through the explanation. He's got this whole story here, but I can summarize it. What's happened is people have registered some legitimate looking emails, basically, which is fairly typically easy to do. And they used AI to generate DMCA takedown notices for random images on people's websites, right? And they're targeting smaller websites because they prefer want to, they want to get somebody who doesn't have a legal department or a lawyer on staff, right? So they're targeting smaller organizations. And they're sending them a letter that basically says that you can't, that if you know that you've used some picture that is the property of our client. What we want you to do is to do proper attribution. So we need you to link from every page on your site or something along these lines, right? a proper attribution of this image to this website. And if you take the image down, we're still going to sue you. So the only way we're not going to sue you is if you put this link all over your website for proper attribution of the image. And anybody who knows how SEO works, they're gaming they're trying to get links to their SEO clients to get their search rankings higher.
Very well played.
I mean, highly illegal. You're impersonating a law
Yeah.
firm and threatening a lawsuit for what's likely, if at best, a misapplication of the DMCA complaints, right? But I mean, as far as a scam goes, it's a unique one.
Oh, and then you can turn around and use this business model and sell, hey, new business. Need to get your Google rankings up? We're
Oh,
the
I'm sure
company
that's
to
what they're
take
doing.
care of that.
I'm sure that's what they're doing. So, I mean, I guess we can read the article here. If you run a personal or hobby website, getting a copyright notice from a law firm about an image on your site can trigger some fast-acting panic. As someone who has paid to settle a news service licensing issue before, the author can empathize with anybody who wants to make this kind of thing go away, which is why a new kind of angle on an angle scheme can seem both obvious to spot and likely effective. Ernie Smith, the prolific, ever curious writer behind the newsletter Tedium, received a quote DMCA copyright infringement notice unquote in late March from Commonwealth Legal, representing the intellectual property division of Tech for Gods. And that is spelled TECH, the numeral 4, GODS.
Wow.
You like that?
A little dweeb there.
Oh,
Anyways, go ahead.
you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. The issue was with a photo of a key fob from legitimate photo service Upsplash used in the service of a post about a strange Uber ride Smith once took. As Smith detailed in a Mastodon thread, the purported firm needed him to add credit to our client immediately through a link to Tech for Gods and said it should be addressed in the next 5 business days. Removing the image does not conclude the matter, and should Smith not take action, the punitive firm would have to activate its case, relying on DMCA 512C, which in many readings does actually grant relief should a website owner unaware of infringing material act explicitly to remove said material. The email unhelpfully points to the main page of the Internet Archive, so that Smith might review past usage records. I mean, I love it. It's total bullshit, right? Yeah, there are quite a few issues with Commonwealth Legal's request, as detailed by Smith and 404 Media. Chief among them is that Commonwealth Legal, a firm theoretically based in Arizona, which is not a Commonwealth, almost certainly does not exist. Despite the 2018 copyright displayed on the site, the website domain was seemingly registered on March the 1st of 2024 with a Canadian IP. So they're not in Arizona. Well, at least the server's not. The address on the firm's site leads to a location that, to say the least, does not match the fourth floor indicated on the website. So somebody had a little bit of fun, right? They went and looked up that address, and it's like a one-story building. So it's like, you know, it's like, yeah, they're not in the fourth floor offices because the fourth floor doesn't exist. While the law firm's website is stuffed full of stock images, so are many websites for professional services, the real tell is the site's list of attorneys, most of which, as 404 Media puts it, have vacant 1,000-yard stares common to AI-generated faces. Oh, is the link still up? I think it got taken down. Oh, no, it's still there.
Oh, no, it's still there.
And yeah, they all look like AI-generated faces. I mean, you know, you would never know. You could just as easily have scanned somebody's yearbook photos, right? But
yeah,
they do kind of all have the same expression on their face. So
this goes back to this Tech for Gods, right? Is it the same website?
That was the link. Do they have a? I was looking to see if they had a picture of the actual complaint. I don't see it. Now I've seen that. I've seen Tech for Gods before. I've come across it once or twice looking for decking stories and just, you know, closed it because it's like, well, that's bullshit. But
it's this one dude, quote unquote, home automation expert, computer programmer, and blogger. Subscribe and follow. But he has stuff on here, but, I mean...
Yeah, it's all generated bullshit.
Yeah. I wonder if this is actually the guy, or if that's generated too.
Oh, who knows?
He's got to have that kind of complex. It probably is him.
Just as a way of getting people to link to his website to try to get the higher SEO ranking. I could see it. I totally see it. Yeah, then there are the attorneys' bios, which offer surface-level competence underpinned by bizarre setups. 5 of the supposedly 12 come from acclaimed law schools at Harvard, Yale, Stanford, and University of Chicago. The other 7 seem to have graduated from the top 5 results you might get for Arizona Law School if you search for it. Sarah Walker has a practice based on copyright violation and judicial criminal proceedings. Quite an uncommon pairing. Sometimes she is upholding the rights of artists, but she also handles high-stakes criminal cases. Walker, it seems, couldn't pick just one track at Yale. Why would someone go through the trouble of making a law firm out of Namecheap, stock art, and AI images, and seemingly copy to send quasi-legal documents to site owners, is backlinks. And that's what I was talking about with the SEO. Basically, the more links you have to a website from other websites, the higher Google ranks it. So, you know, the owner of Tech for Gods told 404 Media's Jason Kolber that he did buy backlinks for his gadget review site, quote, with AI writing assistance. So there it is. Yeah, he admits his website is AI bullshit. He's disclaimed owning the disputed image or any images, made vague suggestions that a disgruntled former contractor may be trying to poison his ranks with spam links.
So that Sarah one is Paula Shaw on LinkedIn. Same picture.
Yeah. I kind of figured it's all stock art, right? It's just some website somebody threw up. Asked by Ars if they had heard back from Commonwealth Legal now that 5 business days were up, Ernie Smith tells Ars no. So, yeah.
It's, nice.
Yeah, of course not. But, I mean, it's an interesting scam. Because I can see a lot of small people, small websites, I should say, getting something like that, panicking, and just doing what it says. When it's like, oh, they don't want money, they just want this link. Okay, I'll just throw the link out there. You know, make it go away kind of thing. I could totally see it.
Yep.
Oh, damn it. This may be a good argument on why so many small businesses don't have websites. They just have Facebook pages now.
Not really, because if Facebook gets a legal complaint, they're more likely just to close your account instead of actually looking at it. A lot of big companies, that's what they do. When they get a legal complaint, they go ahead and act on it immediately, usually just by taking down whatever it is, and then it's up to whoever posted it to go back and argue. Their theory is kind of like, well, if it's legit, you'll argue back, and if it's not, you know, well, you won't complain because all they did was take it down. No harm, you know? Like YouTube does that. They get enough complaints, they just take your video down. They don't even, you know, they don't really look at it unless you really, usually. Sometimes you'll hear about where they were getting complaints and they did look at it, but I think that's kind of rare, so.
Onerous is on the actual creator.
I was just thinking on this specific scam, not just complaints in general, because I don't know if seeing that link on my YouTube, on my Facebook page, help him with what he's doing.
Yeah, probably ranked a lot less than an actual web page that's, you know, got some validity to it. You know, they're targeting somebody who had a fairly popular newsletter site, but wasn't big enough that he's like can call a lawyer, right? And actually deal with it. So instead, they just, you know, had fun digging into it. But, you know, so that's the thing is, yeah, sure, we could go spam, I don't know, Galaxy 15 Radio all over every social media site we could write a bot to post at, right? And that might actually uprank it in Google, except I've never actually looked at the SEO. So I don't even know, considering the webpage has, like, no real text on it. It's like an embedded IRC, the player. So you probably have better luck finding it either searching for like Madman, because your name's almost always on there for the show notes, than anything. So I don't know what Galaxy 15's rankings, whatever, would be. But sure, we could do that. But I don't think it would really be worth all that much, unless you had a whole bunch of high-value websites linking to the web page. Then it would start ticking up in the Google rankings pretty high. You know what I mean? So.
I wonder if we can use this technology for good. By good, I mean we're going to create our own AI fake law firm. And then set this up in some place without an extradition treaty, because I don't want to go to jail for attempting this. And then just start spamming bogus DMCA complaints to everything until that dumb law gets edited and corrected.
More likely we're going to have all of our fake domains taken down as it's just spamming, but I mean, I don't know, dude.
Like where your heart is.
The problem is there are parts of the DMCA that, like, they were trying to do something good with it. They just sucked at it really badly because they had no clue how any of this was going to work. And
yeah, this was not saying repeal, just go in and corrections. We can.
And to be fair, when that law was written, not when it was passed, but when it was written, a lot of that was not yet a thing. So, I don't know. Yeah, the whole complaint notice process is still dumb. Because it's abused all the hell. We talk about it all the time. But the next story is about the Motion Picture Association trying to go for a different copyright infringement law. It's from Torrent Freak. Motion Picture Association. Site blocking will stop pirate website owners who abuse kids and traffic drugs. Yeah, it's like, what? It's like, that escalated quickly. I thought we were talking about pirating TV shows. Where did we get to the drugs thing?
I don't think any of the TV show sites I know of that, you know, pirate TV also sell drugs. Not that I go to those sites, but I haven't seen any advertisements for the marijuanas.
Quick question. Do you use Adblock?
Yes.
That might be why.
Ding, ding, ding.
After a wait of more than 12 years, rights holders in the United States will again seek legislation that will provide the framework for a site-blocking regimen to combat online piracy. After promoting and guiding similar regimes in dozens of countries overseas, the push will see Hollywood studios of the Motion Picture Association urge Congress to bring the United States up to date. Oh, I don't like the way they wrote that. It's
because we're not doing something that other countries are doing doesn't mean we're behind.
Yeah.
They might be doing something bad.
It's no secret that the Motion Picture Association views site-blocking measures in the United States as the next logical step in their perpetual campaign against piracy. Working with U.S. Congress members, the plan is to propose judicial site-blocking legislation that will see local ISPs compelled by law to prevent consumer access to pirate sites. A similar but broader effort failed in 2012, but 12 years is a long time, and the tech and internet world, it's almost forever. Well, yeah, but we still have a lot of the same people in Congress. They're just more crotchety now. Although, a lot of them are also getting senile. Who was it that didn't even have power of attorney before? Who am I thinking of?
Oh, I was just thinking of Ketanji Brown Jackson's discussion of the eclipse this week, you know, where the moon is mostly made of gas.
Yeah, and that, I'm not certain NASA that she's
maybe attempting
human
to colonize the sun.
I'm not certain she's human. I think she's an early AI in a robot body, just spewing. Because that's the same woman who asked about sinking Guam, wasn't it?
Oh no, that was a dude. And I still say that Admiral deserves a raise and a promotion.
Yeah.
We've looked into this. we're fairly certain it's not going to be a problem.
Capsize the island. Really?
Yeah. Great Georgia congressman. Still in Congress. Still in Congress. We're going to capsize Guam. The dude got reelected.
Let me finish the article before I start criticizing it here. In the years since the rise and fall of SOPA, the MPA has been the driving force behind site-blocking legislation around the world, modeling dozens of partner countries in the shape of its vision for blocking in the U.S. At this year's CinemaCon, State of the Industry event at Caesars Palace in Las Vegas, MPA Chairman and CEO Charles Revkin said that the United States now has plenty of catching up to do. Quote, it's long past time to bring out laws in line with the rest of the world, unquote. It actually says out. I think it meant up, but whatever. Revkin said, a reference to MPA's substantial body of overseas work, it now hopes to replicate back home. After reliving the high points of 2023, Martin Scorsese's Killers of the Flower Moon and the portmanteau of the moment, Barbenheimer. Okay. Revkin turned to the bottom line. The MPA's top man reported box office revenues in the U.S. and Canada up 20% on the previous year and up nearly 30% abroad. The unquestionable great achievement, especially without protection from site blocking. But while tradition allows for generous helpings of creative imagery in support of the magical silver screen, financial positives are dwelled upon only fleetingly. The fairy dust is quickly dispersed, bringing reality into sharp focus. Commentary explaining why the figures aren't as good as they sound or will take great effort to maintain helps to calibrate expectations after assuring everyone they're in this together and whatever needs be done will be done, because that's what Hollywood does. The groundwork to support demands for new legislation was carefully laid. It's a tried and tested system that really does work. Rocky Balboa's unbreakable determination. What the fuck? Okay, this stopped making sense. When I read this earlier, it made sense. Why is it not making sense now? Oh, because they're quoting this guy in bits and pieces. We have no illusions about the scope and severity of the problem. The challenges are daunting, uncertain. Okay. Piracy rhetoric usually finds itself delivered in a way that counters notions of stability based on reported business success. When an urgent drive for new legislation is imminent, there's no room for complacency, and at CinemaCon, the nature of the threat left nothing to the imagination. Quote, remember, these aren't teenagers playing an elaborate prank. The perpetrators are real-life mobsters, organized crime syndicates, many of whom engage in child pornography, prostitution, drug trafficking, and other ills, unquote, Revkin informed the audience. And it's not just big companies facing an imminent threat. The entire country is at risk. Quote, they operate websites that draw in millions of unsuspecting viewers whose personal data can fall prey to malware and hackers, unquote, Revkin said. Quote, in short, piracy is clearly not a victimless crime, unquote. Uh-huh. So, I'm not going to finish this because it's more of just him ranting. But they're pushing again to try to get a law in place to where they can request websites to be blocked. Now, it is a legal framework, so they would have to go through a judge, but they're once again trying to do the same thing they tried with SOPA back in 2012, and they want to get a legal framework in place to say, ISPs, you have to block the Pirate Bay, you have to block F movies, you have to block, I don't know, whatever the streaming site of the moment is. Those seem to go up and down so often it doesn't really matter, but The problem is that, one, it's ineffective because these websites just come up with a different domain, usually just by changing the .com to .su or .whatever, right?
Yep.
And two, you're going to make ISPs have to put a ton of infrastructure in place to manage this bullshit, and you're going to clog the courts with all these cases trying to get websites blocked in the United States. I think it's the wrong way to fight the problem. Could mobsters be running the pirate websites? Sure, why not? I have no clue who runs them. I don't think that it's directly supporting the things he says it's strictly supporting. I think he's just trying to fearmonger to get support. Madman, you've been quiet.
I mean, other than blocking, what other ways of fighting it is it, or is it just something that
you sue the individual site?
It's not worth fighting.
Well, that's an argument too, but it's okay. If somebody is hosting your movie, right, you sue them.
Yeah.
Copyright law is already pretty damn punitive. You know, this, like the guy that Nintendo sued under the ground, what was his name? Gary Bowser? Like, you know, they declared he owed millions of dollars. I'm trying to remember the torrent website. It wasn't Pirate Bay. It was when they actually sued, because I think it was hosted out of Canada. But some of these lawsuits, when they start throwing out numbers, they're asking for more money in damages than exists. So the copyright law is already really punitive. The fact that they're trying to get a site blocking regime in place, I think, has more to do with the fact that they don't control every publisher. And that I feel like it's a bid to gain control. So,
is that why they don't have to go, they don't have to worry about legal jurisdiction? Is if, you know, sites being, I don't know, hosted out of China, just to pick on somebody. That doesn't, just because you subpoena them and say, take it down, doesn't mean China's going to cooperate with you.
Exactly. And we have a last-minute invasion by an RU.
I told you I wouldn't make the beginning of the show, man.
Oh, I thought you weren't going to make the show at all.
No, it's just the beginning. I knew I'd make the last half, but this timing got in the road this morning.
Go ahead, Static. I saw you lighting up there.
Crikey. A stray Aussie showed up.
Enough out of your racism, thank you.
God hates Australia.
Certainly does.
I assumed it would take longer to hammer out the treaty between the kangaroos and the platypi to help you overthrow the government.
We gotta defeat the emu army first.
Oh, those are some crafty birds.
Huh.
Shit got weird, man.
Damn it, now I want to smoke an emu.
You gotta spatchcock them, dude. You need a fucking big grill.
I've got access to a smoker that'll accommodate a whole hog.
There is a YouTube channel that did spatchcock an ostrich.
So, Static, did you have anything else on that last story before we move on?
No, I mean, is it a far stretch that the crime syndicates could be running F-movies or whoever these pirates are? Sure. However, not far of a stretch, those that typically dabble in more illegal have their lines of gray easier to be.
Yeah, I wasn't arguing that. I mean, sure, they could be. I mean, okay, I might have sounded sarcastic, but I don't know who's running these websites, so sure, could be.
But this is not the approach that they should take in order to get it. I agree with you. I think it is a power grab.
I mean, because the moment you could make a really strong argument for blocking, you know, being able, well, because they already do it, right? They seize websites where really illegal shit is hosted, right? You know, the FBI Department of You Sick Fuck shows up and, you know, solves the problem. So expanding that to copyright, well, we've already seen copyright abused to do censorship on various websites before, so I just don't see that going well if you're giving the MPA the ability to decide what websites are blocked and which ones aren't.
Yeah, it's kind of moving it from civil to criminal, and I will say it is criminal, but I don't know if I want the FBI dealing with it as much as I want just sue the guy and then take his money.
Oh no, I want when I was talking about the FBI, I was specifically referring to websites that are dealing with like drugs,
yeah, no,
that
child one's criminal,
porn.
But this is moving it into streaming into criminal.
Okay, there you go. Okay, yeah. So it's like, yeah, no, absolutely. If somebody's dealing in kiddie porn, send the FBI in to take their head off with a shovel or, you know, whatever you know method you want. But and you know what? That yeah, those websites should be at risk of just being globally blocked. But I don't know about the civil thing. And I think Madman put it really well, you know, the division between criminal and civil there. So, all right, next article is from xdadevelopers.com. Microsoft will not update your Windows 11 PC if it has these apps. So somebody screwed up and they managed to pull a list of several applications that are in a check before Microsoft will install updates. So what's interesting about it, because some of it makes sense, like there's one in there about a particularly old version of VLC. It's like meant for a Windows 7 box. So it might just be kind of a thing. But Start All Back is in the list. And I noticed something else because I have that Windows 11 machine I've been playing with on that Surface. I installed Classic Start on it. Partially quit working.
Damn.
The Classic Start would come up if I pressed the Start button on the keyboard, but not if I used the mouse or clicked on the button or tapped on the screen. And that was after an update that it changed, because it was working.
There's two things that won't upgrade on mine now.
Yeah.
This list is getting better.
So a little while ago, we learned that Windows 11 wouldn't update if Start All Back was installed. This is because Microsoft cites performance and security issues with the apps and asks the user to uninstall it before they're allowed to upgrade to the newest version. Now someone has a full list of apps Microsoft dislikes. If you have one of them installed, you can expect a difficult time upgrading Windows 11 in the future. So, let's see. Spotted by the German website DeskModder, there's a list of apps that Microsoft keeps within the AppRaiser.sdb file, which Windows 11 checks when upgrading your PC. If you have an app, or if you, an app you have installed matches one of the apps, it will block the upgrade from going through. DeskMonitor notes that this wasn't as simple as blocking an app based entirely on its name, for example. And while VLC is listed on the big list of services and apps that are disallowed, it's specifically a listing for a Windows 7 version of VLC. DeskMonitor said the following apps will cause issues on Windows 11. So Cosino Admin, that's part of SolidWorks. Ease US Disk Copy. Explorer Patcher. EPDWN.exe. iCloud Services.exe. iCloud files shared in Explorer via WhatsApp. So part of iCloud it bitches about. Radeon Software.exe. That's your radio. That's your GPU drivers for AMD. Start all back CFG.exe. Start all back. Multimon plus Copilot. Merge SDB from Microsoft. Intel. INTCOED.S. I think that's a driver. Intel INTCAudioBus.sys. And looks like a Realtek wireless USB 2.0 adapter driver. So, unfortunately, if you use one of these apps, all hope isn't lost. As previously reported, install backfans found they could uninstall the app, update Windows, and reinstall it by renaming the installer executable. They stop Windows 11 from blocking the install and let you get the app back on your PC. So, Microsoft is starting to try to get a little bit handsy with what you're allowed to install on your computer. Now, it's blocking it on updates, and so a lot of these look like drivers. So I could see where they're blocking for legitimate, you know, like, hey, something doesn't work right reasons. But start all back, US disk copy, iCloud, really? So, I mean, you know, of course, I've been bitching about Microsoft for a couple of years now, but yeah, I could see them wanting to lock it down to where if it didn't come from their app store, they don't want you running it. I could see them, you know, staring at Apple doing that and just drooling.
But hold the phone.
Okay.
Two lines say Microsoft.
Yeah, they've got their own apps in there. You're right.
They hate their own software. I mean, why wouldn't they want you to use these?
Well, some of these, like I said, look like drivers, and so it could be legitimate something doesn't work right with the update.
Mm.
And I imagine that's probably what it is for most of these, is that they've found some kind of a compatibility bug, and instead of figuring out what's wrong in the update, they're just putting out a block list of don't install the update if you have this because it breaks something. But the start is back one is interesting.
So does it warn people or just it doesn't update, period?
I think it asks you to uninstall whatever the problem app is. At least that's what they're saying, because they said it brings up a... Where'd it go? Windows checks. It will block the upgrade from going through. I thought it said it would actually pop up and ask you to remove it before. It'll block the upgrade.
Yep.
Fortunately, if you use one of these apps, they could uninstall the app, reinstall it. This stops Windows from blocking it. Okay. Maybe I imagined that. I could have sworn I read in here that it had a warning. It just says it blocks the install. So they probably do get a notice.
Oh, at the very top. Top paragraph. It says it. Yeah. Someone has unearthed the full list. Right above that, it says you'll be asked.
Yeah.
To uninstall.
Yep. Well, remember when they were pushing Windows 10 to Windows 11, it had a list of things that it didn't want you running.
Yeah.
So... I mean, again, it could be for a lot of it looks like it's probably just legitimate. There's a problem. Something doesn't work right if you have those installed and you do the update. But again, some of them are kind of funny. So.
Yeah, anything where it's Microsoft's own stuff, it's funny. Now, the whole we're not going to let you use iCloud, I think that's you're just targeting Apple products at that point.
That's kind of a dumb business decision, given how many people use iPhones.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about the non-power user who has to deal with all this coming up.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? Is they're just going to uninstall it and say, well, I guess I can't use that. Let me go find something else. Or just not use it.
Either buy a new machine or they're out of the market.
Well, that's what they were pushing with Windows 11, because they put a lot of requirements on there that, you know, people would mod out the installer and figure out they weren't real requirements that they thought they were just trying to push people to buy new hardware.
You're going to have a bunch of machines out there that aren't updated, security patched, just floating around because the people, I don't want to say too stupid, they're just, it's not their hobby. You know what I mean?
So should I be sad about that for professional pride, or should I be happy about that for job security?
Well, I think it's a sad indictment of society. Because let's face it, it's going to be lax security everywhere. We're going to have more cybersecurity crime, more stolen shit.
Well, are you? I hate to ask, but how's that any different from how it is now? Although I was complaining earlier about the broadcast box forcing me to do an update reboot before we did the show.
I know I run an out of date box on the internet, but it's a media box. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't have anything on it.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure the Commodore 64 doesn't count.
Yeah, no, I know, I see what you're saying, but I mean, if you're using it for everyday banking and email and stuff like that, and you've been opted out of, you haven't opted out of security updates, they've just said, well, you're too stupid to figure it out, buy something new, you can't afford it. So well, suddenly you're running an unsecured machine using your banking.
I'm going to say this, and I don't know if Static's going to agree or disagree with me. I think you're going to disagree with me pretty vehemently, are you? I would say this, for this day and age, if you're wanting to do banking online, you're probably better off using your bank's app on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I didn't know you could do that, but then again, I have no idea about phones.
Well, the reason I say that,
domain, man.
The reason I say that is you can usually do better authentication, and your bank is going to have an app, and some of them, they're just wrapping a web page. Most of them aren't, and the banks are subject to some, at least the publicly traded ones are subject to some pretty strict security audits and controls. So they're at least going to be doing their SSL and their coding reviews correctly. Because if they're not, the FTC or the banking, what's that, OD, Madman, help me out. What's the other one?
Office of the Comptroller is one of them.
Yeah, they usually come down on them pretty hard if they're not doing proper. Some of the basics.
What you're saying is Microsoft's just flipped the middle finger to its user base.
I think they did that a couple of years ago, but yes.
Oh.
I mean, I've been. How long have I been complaining about every crappy thing Microsoft does on decking?
Microsoft isn't in the market to sell you software. They're in the market to sell you a service.
That's true. They want you to. Yeah, that's true. When I set up that Surface, I think I had to click through about 6 or 8. I don't want to give Microsoft money for an Office 365 account screens.
Yeah. I mean, it's just pushing me further and further back to retro gaming and getting offline. You know what I mean?
I think that might be our problem. We're still looking at Microsoft used to sell us products, and I like that model of I'm buying this, I know what I'm getting, I know what I'm paying for, and now I'll do whatever I want with it, and Microsoft wants to sell me a service.
Is this where I'm supposed to shout learn Linux? Because I think that's how I was finishing off most Microsoft stories for a while.
Well, I was reading, I think user uptake on Linux is about 4% now for personal computers.
I imagine like half that's the Steam Deck.
I'd say yes, but that's some article I read a couple of weeks ago talking about Linux.
So.
And how the usage of it's gone up by private users. But yeah, that makes sense with the Steam Book.
Well, the gag of it is, if all you need is a web browser, some basics, you know, file management, maybe, you know, Office Suite, Linux is the right way to go. But the moment you need specialized hardware, specialized software, you're kind of screwed. because a lot of that stuff either doesn't work or doesn't work nearly as well. Reaches 4% into static's got an Ars Technica article. Linux market share passes 4% for the first time. macOS dominance declines. Linux was on 6% if you count Chrome.
Thank you for doing the legwork. I saw an article.
So, anyways, next article is also from Ars Technica. Although I do need to copy this link into the IRC and throw it in the show notes. Just put that in closing thoughts, just so we've got it, since it was a good find on Static's part. Starting today, when was this? This was yesterday. So starting today, ISPs must display labels with price, speeds, and data caps. The FTC is, not FTC, the FCC. The FTC is something else. The FCC basically wants a nutrition label on broadband ads with all the pricing on it. So, starting today, I mean, the picture, it looks like a fucking nutrition label. I love it.
It does.
Starting today, home internet and mobile broadband providers in the U.S. are required to display consumer labels with information on prices, speeds, and data allowances. Quote, today's nationwide launch of the broadband consumer label means internet service providers are now required to display consumer-friendly labels at the point of sale, unquote. The Federal Communications Commission said, quote, labels are required for all standalone home or fixed internet service or mobile broadband plans. Providers must display the label, not simply an icon or a link to the label, in close proximity to an associated plan's advertisement. Unquote. The labels are required now for providers with at least 100,000 subscribers, while ISPs with fewer customers have until October 10th, 2024 to comply. Quote, if a provider is not displaying their labels or has posted inaccurate information about its fees or service plans, consumers can file a complaint with the FCC Consumer Complaint Center, the agency webpage says. The October 10th date will bring an additional requirement that provides, or that providers, quote, make the labels machine-readable to enable third parties to more easily collect and aggregate data for the purpose of creating comparison shopping tools for consumers, unquote, the FCC said. Now, it goes on detailing some of the requirements, how the ISPs are not very happy about this, but they now have to comply. I think this is great, because all it's doing is saying, here is a standard pricing sheet you must provide, and you must say, what are the charges? What's the total price? What's your download speed? What's your upload speed? What's your data allowance? Because it's purely requiring transparency and advertising. That's all it is. Yeah, it's telling
you this is what you've purchased.
Yes, I'm down with that. Clear, concise information so that you can make an educated decision is always good. I don't like that the government. I don't like that the government has to require it. I like the government to stay out of things, but in this case. Again, what they're requiring, I don't think that's bad, and I don't think it's onerous.
And the businesses weren't doing it.
And I stepped on Static. So, yeah. I didn't mean to do that. Static, go ahead.
You're good, buddy. I logged into my provider to see if what it looks like for me, and went to upgrade. And it's there at the bottom, except for the third option that I have on mine. It says broadband facts. Big red exclamation point. We're having technical display issues and can't display this info right now.
It also may cause cancer in California.
probably somewhere. I mean, everything does. So I'm okay with this. I love it.
Yeah, I am too. Because it's not particularly onerous, and it's all it's requiring is that you be honest about what you're selling. The fact that they had to make them do this is sad.
Mm-hmm.
But also, most ISPs are already kind of local monopolies anyways. I found out today I actually have two choices. My local municipality, which is what I use, or Spectrum. That's it. That's all I have.
You have a duopoly.
Yep. And if I went with Spectrum, I would basically be paying twice as much for the same damned thing. So why the hell would I do that? Though I found out people in the townhomes in my subdivision, they don't have a choice. They're pre-wired for Spectrum. That's it. That is their only choice.
That's bizarre.
Because the people who own the townhomes have an agreement with Spectrum.
Yeah, they probably gain a discount.
But
are these townhomes rentals, or are they things that these people can buy? Okay.
They're all rentals.
That makes a bit more sense.
But yeah, no, I'm all for clear, honest information so you can make an educated decision. I like that. So, you know, if you're going to have government putting labeling requirements out there, shit like this is actually what it should be. It's like required so that you can look at it and see, what am I buying? What am I paying? What do I get? Now, I saw another article earlier where some ISPs are already fucking with it and twisting it so it's not working quite like it should. But I have a feeling after a court case or two, that'll get sorted out.
Now, if we can only get the medical profession to do this.
God willing.
And I know a big problem of what that is, the insurance companies that all can all go burn in hell.
And most likely will.
But now we just need to know, how much does it cost when I go get a checkup?
Madman just wants to see the pricing sheet. So how much does it cost for the hot nosh to funnel by a ball?
And if not the hot nurse, I'm willing to pay extra for a paper bag over my head.
You brought your own fun mask.
I mean, everyone is hot Angelina Jolie when I have a bag over my head.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Chef's happy fun bag. Oh, fuck. Well, we're not going to have a dojo tonight when we got 10 minutes left. Okay, next one's from the Register. This is just funny. We never agreed to only buy HP ink, say printer owners. This is interesting. I'm kind of curious to see where this goes. HP, quote, sought to take advantage of consumers' sunk costs, unquote, printer owners claimed this week in a class action lawsuit against the hardware giant. I think we did talk about the story where they were putting this lawsuit together, didn't we?
I think so.
Either we did or I read it and thought I want to talk about this on Decking. So, lawyers representing the aggrieved were responding in an Illinois court. Damn it! Illinois. I just did that. So somebody shame me. I just said Illinois.
Yeah.
Illinois.
I read it. An Illinois court with a, you know, it's like when somebody reads corpse instead of Marine Corps, you know, it's like, damn it. I just, you know, caught what I did. But anyways, Illinois court to an earlier HP motion to dismiss a January lawsuit. Among other things, the plaintiff's filing stated that the printer buyers, quote, never entered into any contractual agreement to buy only HP-branded ink prior to receiving the firmware update, unquote. They alleged HP broke several anti-competitive statutes, which they claim, quote, bar tying schemes and certain uses of software to accomplish without permission, what would monopolize an aftermarket for replacement ink cartridges when those results are achieved in a way that takes advantage of consumer sunk costs, unquote. In the case, which began in January, the plaintiffs are arguing that HP issued a firmware update between late 2022 and early 2023 that they allege disables their printers if they install a replacement cartridge that was not HP branded. They are asking for damages that include the cost of the now useless third-party cartridges and an injunction to disable the part of the firmware update that prevents the use of third-party ink. In a March filing, HP claimed it went to great lengths to let consumers know that the printers are intended to only work with cartridges with an HP security chip, while the plaintiffs say it uses software updates to block consumers from using cheaper rival cartridges in HP printers. The hardware giant characterizes this as dynamic security measures to, quote, prevent the use of third-party printer cartridges that copy HP security chips, i.e. cloned or counterfeit cartridges. HP does not block cartridges that that reuse HP security chips, and there are many such options available for sale, nor does HP conceal its use of dynamic security, the company said. You okay there, Madman?
Madman's either having a seizure or falling out of his chair, or both.
Oh, no, I thought I was muted. I was untangling a cord. Oops.
It sounded like you were doing Mortal Kombat with a mouse under your desk.
Ah. Well, I don't believe I ever saw in any of my HP boxes, we've got a chip in this shit, and if you don't use our ink, we'll kill you. Though I believe HP is lying.
The gag of it to me is that, oh, no, we can't use counterfeit chips because it's a security risk. The only reason you have chips in the ink cartridges at all is to prevent people from using non-HP ink cartridges. Otherwise, because it's just a funny-shaped plastic, right? So there wouldn't be a security issue if you weren't trying to lock people into using the HP ink. Yeah. It added that printer owners can't claim damages for being overcharged under federal antitrust laws because consumers who buy products from an intermediary can sue the manufacturer for injunctive relief under those laws, but they can't sue the manufacturer to recover damages resulting from alleged overcharge. Quote, none of the named plaintiffs allege that they purchased printer ink directly from HP after receiving a dynamic security firmware update, HP said. Okay, that is the most technicality of technicalities. It's like, well, you bought it from, you know, a retailer, not from us. It also said Robinson & Co. hadn't, quote, plausibly alleged that HP acted without authorization or exceeded authorized access when the software tweak came through. HP CEO Enrique Lores has made no secret of the fact that it hopes to pull consumers into a print subscription business model. Lores said in an interview earlier this year that if a customer, quote, doesn't print enough or doesn't use our supplies, it's a bad investment, unquote. However, in fairness, when it comes to ink cartridges, HP is far from alone in charging steep prices, with some estimates placing printer ink prices at $439 to $2,380 per liter. Some printer makers make a loss on retailing the device. They asked HP for comment. They did not get a response. So I'm just curious to see where this one goes.
Yeah.
And this is why I like refillable.
Well, you turned me on to that concept too, and that's what I ended up buying for my last printer. And for one thing, the refillable tanks are so large for all the printing I've been doing, I've barely scratched what's in it. And when I ordered it, it came with enough extra ink that I could probably print an entire library without running out.
Exactly, yeah.
I do love the statement of, if you don't print enough, you're a liability. Like, I don't know. If I bought your printer, I can print as much or as little with it as I want. It's my printer.
Again, they don't want to sell you a product. They want to sell you a service.
You're exactly right.
I can only roll up so many barts.
Well, that's my question is, in this day and age, what are people printing so much at home? I mean, yeah, I have an inkjet printer. I run character sheets on it, some reference papers, the occasional photo. And I've got a few other little projects where it's been handy. But I'm not printing every day. I'm not. There are weeks I'm not printing. It probably averages out to about a page a week of what I print. Maybe two or three if I'm doing something. But you know, I just don't print that much. Did I step on you, Static?
Nope.
Okay.
Yeah, ever since I got out of college, I mean, school was what I did most of my printing as far as legit printing.
Yeah.
Because if I'm at work, yeah, I print shit, but you know whose printer I'm using? The work printer.
Well, that's who HP wants to be selling to, too. They want to sell the businesses, not the individuals. I'm just wondering, what the hell are people running off so much that they're going... I mean, although, to be fair, most ink cartridges use a lot less ink than these ink tanks. So, Static turned me on to that when I last needed a printer. And it's just like, yeah, that's what you buy. Because, holy shit. That, and you know what the ink comes in? A bottle. And you just refill the printer. So I don't got to worry about security chips or whatever other shit.
If I get desperate, I can make my own ink.
Gross.
If they want out of the consumer market, they can just leave it.
They don't, but they want to treat the consumer market like they treat the corporate market. They want to, that what they really want, because if you ever look at how large service companies like Ricoh and I used to know like three others.
Yeah, they don't actually own their printers; they rent them.
Right? Yeah, that's what they, that's what a lot of these large print services companies do. Is they'll come in and set up devices, and they manage the ink, and they manage the paper, and they manage the services, and they charge the company per page printed. And that's, I mean, that's what I think HP wants to do, because they're talking about their subscription model and people who don't print enough. They want to charge per page printed. But it's a consumer, so they also want to sell you the device and all the supplies. So they want you to pay for everything, and then they want you to pay for subscription for each page you print. Which is asinine after you've bought the device, but, you know, they, like you said, or like Static said, they don't want to sell you a product, they want to sell you a service. Because they don't want you to be able to service yourself, they want you to have to come back to them for everything you need. Could you make your own ink?
Money.
In all seriousness, Static, you could make your own ink for these things?
Cool. Yeah. It's all pigments, man.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess you could go get like a, I don't know, fountain pen.
Take the base.
Huh?
Get the right pick. You have the base, and then all you have to do is get the appropriate CMYK or RGB. Depends on what your colors you're making. Follow the right pigment codes and make your own.
Well, I thought inkjet machines needed a pretty finely formulated pigment so they wouldn't jam the thing up. I mean, I'm assuming I can't just go buy fountain pen ink and, you know, inject it in there.
Well, you could.
I'm assuming it wouldn't work that well. So, anyways, last article I have for tonight is from The Verge. And I've talked about this idea before with a different one, but this is just funny. Texas is replacing thousands of human exam graders with AI. Students in Texas taking their state-mandated exams this week are being used as guinea pigs for the new artificial intelligence-powered scoring system set to replace a majority of human graders in the region. The Texas Tribune reports a, quote, automated scoring engine, unquote, that utilizes natural language processing, a technology that enables chatbots like OpenAI's ChatGPT to understand and communicate with users. So actually, the fact that the Tribune is calling it an automated scoring engine and not AI is a win, because Static was right. This stuff is not intelligent. is being rolled out by the Texas Education Agency to grade open-ended questions on the State of Texas Assessments and Academic Readiness Exams. The agency is expecting the system to save $15 to $20 million per year by reducing the need for temporary human scorers, with plans to hire under 2,000 grads this year compared to the 6,000 required in 2023. The STAR exams, which test students between the 3rd and 8th grades on their understanding of the core curriculum, were redesigned last year to include fewer multiple-choice questions and now contains up to 7 times more open-ended questions, with TEA Director of Student Assessment Jose Rios saying the agency, quote, wanted to keep as many constructed open-ended responses as we can, but they take an incredible amount of time to score, unquote. According to a slideshow hosted at T's website, the new scoring system was trained using 3,000 exam responses that had already received 2 rounds of human grading. Some safety nets have also been implemented. A quarter of all the computer grade results will be rescored by humans, for example, as well as answers that confuse the AI system, including the use of slang or non-English responses. While TEA is optimistic that AI will enable it to save buckets of cash, some educators aren't so keen to see it implemented. Louisville Independent School Director, Superintendent, blah, 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 blah. So, the reason that this is going to win is because it's so much cheaper, not because it's better. So, the AI is going to win because it's cheaper. And eventually the students are going to be using the AI to write their answers. So it'll be AI written answers being graded by AI bots. So the students and teachers become irrelevant to the education system. Am I understanding this right?
Well, yeah, on this particular test, the students are being watched by proctors. So unless they smuggle in the answers pre-written, at least on this example, the students will be writing the answers and the bots won't know what a fucking good answer is. It needs to be more... on some of these, it needs to be more than grammatically correct. Did it touch on the prompt? Fuck.
Go ahead, Ari.
Was it creative?
Yeah, you're starting to see where the cycle's heading. Not needing humans anymore. It's the beginning of it. The useless eaters, as they're known as.
Well, the only reason they're going to be useless eaters is we're not going to be educating them.
Well, name one first world country where the education system is actually getting better.
Static's living room.
I well, can name
homeschooling
states, but not whole countries.
Yeah, no, the school system's collapsing. It's not fit for purpose anymore. Because it was meant to make people ready for 9-to-5s. Don't do that anymore.
Well, Static is the only person who actually has kids. I'll give you the last word on this before we close out the show.
I'm sorry to the future generations. We fucked up. You will too. See ya.
We were wrong.
Who's this wee motherfucker? I did everything right.
Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Pure Decking every Thursday. Galaxy 15 radio site, the BBS, which I forgot to check and see if it's working. It was not working before, but we've been having some problems with the server, so I'll look at it sometime. Static, closing thoughts.
I think the serial is going to be really good with all these broadband nutritional labels.
Nice.
And I think that'll pass the AI proctor grading it. It was grammatically correct. Made no fucking sense. Might not have had anything to do with the prompt he was given. But the period was in the right place.
Oh, God. Madman, was that your closing thought?
Might as well be.
Cool. RU, close us out.
And did anybody watch the new Fallout TV show yet?
No, I haven't. And please tell me it's okay.
I think it's going to be a case-by-case basis, Madman. Some are going to like it, some are going to hate it. I'm two episodes in, I'm like, why the fuck do I do this? Why am I watching this?
Has anybody watched the new X-Men, the 97?
I've been watching it, and I think it's okay so
far. It's actually doing pretty good, yeah.
I watched the first season of Tulsa King. I do believe that is a good show.
It is a good show, very good show. Those who aren't watching Shogun yet, you should get onto that. Fantastic. Bit of a read, but it's still a good show.
All right. I think it's time for some sound effects.
Thank you for your continuing patience during this transitional zombie apocalypse. Your satisfaction is very important to us.
Man, I'm sorry about this. I hope this doesn't ruin your day.